Please welcome Rachel Ross.
In the summer of 1963, I made the life of another little 11-year-old girl a living hell. I was a down and out, straight ahead bully, the queen of mean. It was not a pretty picture, but I need to tell you that before I was a bully, I was a victim of bullying, and that's the right place to start. When I was a little girl, my mom said I was just adorable as a baby, but when I was like 5 or 6, I became kind of tubby, and I had a unibrow that you could walk across, and I had buck teeth, really, really bad buck teeth, and I was hirsute. That's a fancy word for hairy. Now, words play a big role in this story. So I was hirsute and I got made fun of a lot. When we moved into a new neighborhood, I wanted friends on the block and the girls ostracized me. But one day they said, oh, Rocky, you know, come over here. We want to give you something. You want an Indian burn? That was the word they used. And I said, yeah, they were going to give me something. They said, okay, give us your arm. I stuck out my arm and they twisted it behind my back, and I ran home crying. A lot of things like that happened, and I would cry to my parents. And my dad always told me the story of the ugly duckling. And he said, one day, honey, you're gonna be a swan. Your mom and I know it. And this story gave me little comfort, some comfort. But over the years, from 5 to around 8, I really got into reading, and words were just a thrill for me. I was really into Greek mythology, and that gave me this incredible vocabulary, and I was able to just become a little wordsmith, and I became a leader of my little crew of girls, and rather bossy. I liked to tell them what to do, and they followed me around, so I was kind of inflated with my sense of power with my words. And in the summer of 1963, we returned, my brother, sister, and I, to this wonderful camp where we went every summer up in the Idlewild Mountains, Camp Roosevelt, and I loved it there. I knew all the counselors, I knew all the campers, and I was really in my own. And the first day of the summer, in our new cabin, I knew most of the girls, but there was a new girl. Her name was Meg, and she was kind of tubby, and she had a unibrow, and she had bushy hair, kind of like mine, and she had a training bra. Now, I didn't know what she was training for. It seemed like she was claiming to be more adult or womanly than us other 11-year-old girls. And these are the silly reasons that I didn't like her. And the other reason was Meg was an only child, and she was raised by two very intelligent academic parents in academia. So she had an amazing vocabulary. Her words were bigger than mine. She would say odorous instead of smelly, or I'm famished instead of hungry, and I did not like her. And I had my minions follow my orders, and we made her life a living hell. We short-sheeted. I was never physically hurtful to her. That's how girls are. The bullying we do is more psychological. We short-sheeted her bed. We put a frog in her bed at night. We put ice down her pajamas at night. We ostracized her. We tormented her. She cried often. It was a terrible summer. The director of the camp tried to stop it. She asked me, she was a psychologist. She tried to diagnose me, and why are you doing this? And just because. I had no understanding of my problem. She told my parents at the end of summer that I was sick, a sick child, and that I couldn't come back to camp if I didn't change. And my parents took me home, and I didn't get therapy, but they loved me unconditionally. And life began to teach me a lesson. When I went back to school, my minions turned on me. Mutiny. They ostracized me. They didn't want to be bossed around by me anymore. And I got my nearsightedness diagnosed, and I had to wear Coke bottle glasses, and I was adrift on the playground with no friends. Finally, the science nerds and the drama club took me in, and I'm very grateful for that. And over time, my dad's prediction about the ugly duckling kind of came true. I got tall, and quite tall for me. I was taller than all the boys. And so I lost weight, or I stretched out. And I learned to straighten my hair, and I learned to pluck and bleach all the other unwanted hair. And so in eighth grade, I got voted prettiest girl. And then in my freshman year of college, even though I spent every lunchtime in the bathroom, because there I wouldn't wear those Coke bottle glasses, and in the bathroom I could see people up close. I didn't want to walk down the halls and have people say, "Hey, Rocky," and I didn't know who they were. I was a mess. So I was spent a lot of time in the bathroom at lunch, where I had a group of friends and my drama friends. But I got voted freshman princess, and much to my chagrin. And so at our high school, you have to reign over the opening game of basketball season. And you have to, each of the princesses enter from the top of the gym, and you have to walk down 42 something very steep stairs. But I couldn't wear my glasses. I was a princess. So I had to walk down these very steep stairs with my bouquet of 24 roses and my escort waiting at the bottom and the music playing. And I was the only one who was going like this all the way down the stairs, and everybody in the gym was holding their breath. And when I finally got to the bottom without falling, everybody clapped and sigh of relief. And I sat there through the first game. I had to sit there with my court, the queen, and on the other with my flowers, and I couldn't see anything, so I was bored stiff, and that was the humiliation. And soon after that, I was walking home one day, and I did a physical about face, because I had felt on that throne there as a freshman princess, just like a poser. So-called pretty on the outside, but ugly duckling on the inside. So I did an about face. I knew where Meg lived, and I walked over to her house instead of walking home. She didn't go to our high school. I hadn't seen her since she left camp. But I knew where she lived, and I'm walking over there. I'm thinking, what if is she going to be home? What am I going to say? What is she going to say? And I get to her house, and it's this kind of mansion, kind of foreboding behind these big, big bushes. And I walk up this windy driveway, and there's these giant marble steps, and I stumble up them. And then there's this giant door. Everything appeared very giant to me at that moment. And I took a breath, and I waited. And then I heard shuffling on the tile floor inside, and a middle-aged man opened the door. I didn't know who he was. He didn't know who I was. I said, "Is Meg home?" And he said, wait a moment, please. He left the door ajar. Moments later, I heard more footsteps on the tile, and Meg came to the door. And when she saw me, all the color in her face drained away, and she held the door kind of in front of her like a shield. "Meg, I'm sorry about that. What I did to you that summer, it was really wrong and stupid and I'm sorry. And I saw a smile crease her lips and her rosy cheeks return, and she said, "Thanks." And I said, "Okay then, have a good freshman year." And I turned and I glided down those marble steps with 20/20 vision, not the kind in your eyes that some of you lucky people have, the kind that comes from a recalibrated moral compass. That's what I got. And I just want to say, I did a little research and I read recently that over 50% of kids say that they experience bullying at some point in their school years. And about 10% of them grow up to be adult bullies, bully in the workplace, bully at home. So what's the secret sauce? I didn't go that route. I would say that it's, in my case, a good combination of unconditional love and walking a mile in their shoes, where I got a chance to experience empathy. And in a tiny sliver of our species, the wires are just horribly crossed, and these people can't experience empathy. They're psychopaths and they're dangerous, but the rest of us can. Empathy is a muscle. It's very powerful. It turned me around. Imagine what it can do for you. Thank you.